Hello and welcome to Meet the Writers. I'm Georgina Godwin. On the show today, I talk to a German pilot who's a laboratory manager at the Max Planck Institute of Ornithology about an extraordinary project and the resulting book, Papa Goose. It's a work that already looks set to become a classic, and it charts the moving and often hilarious story of bringing up seven goslings from egg to independence over the course of a year. Michael Quetting, welcome to Meet the Writers. Your book is called Papa Goose, 1 year, seven goslings and the flight of my life. And obviously I want to get on to the story of exactly how that came about, but I'd like to start a little bit earlier on. Were you always of a scientific nature?
Yes. I always worked in laboratories. But before I came to the Max Planck Institute, I worked in a DNA lab, and we do some DNA sequencing and cloning and such things. So I got fed up with it and I looked for a new job. So I saw this advertisement in the newspaper from the Max Planck Institute.
And you're also a pilot.
Yes. I'm a pilot for a really long time, for over 20 years. I started with hang gliding, then do paragliding. And then starting at the Max Planck Institute, I got the private pilot license for our plane. And when we started the Geese project, somebody had to make the license for microlight planes.
And so you did that?
Yes.
Yeah. Now, what about being a writer? Is there a history of literature in your life?
No, not at all. I didn't plan to write a book. I only wrote a blog within the project when I was living with the Geese, and a newspaper read the blog. Then it got spread all over Germany, and so a book agency came up to me and asked me if I want to write a book. And then I said, yes, there's so much funny stories about the little goslings. So I write it down.
So let's start from the beginning. So the Max Planck Institute decided to do these weather experiments and they needed to do it on imprinted geese. Explain to me the phrase imprinted geese.
The process of imprinting is what you can do with animals who leave their nest immediately after hatching. There are other birds which are fed inside the nest and leave the nest when they're ready to fly. And these birds you can't imprint. But Konrad Lorenz showed it 40 years ago that you can imprint geese. And so you have to be the first they see when they hatch, and then you are the daddy. And it doesn't matter if it's a football or it's something else. They got imprinted on the first thing they got to know when they hatch.
But in fact, you started a lot earlier than the hatching. You started with interacting with the eggs. Tell us about that.
Yes, I started searching the eggs in the wild outside. So I put on my rubber boots and walk around the Lake of Constance and wanted to try to find some grey-leg geese nests. And after 2 weeks, I quit because I didn't have a chance to find a single nest. I always saw them swimming on the lake, but I can't find a nest. And so I had to order the eggs from a breeder in northern Germany. And then I put them into the incubator in the basement of the institute.
Now, before we get on to exactly what happened at that point, let's just talk about what was going on in your personal life at that moment, because you weren't having an easy time.
No, I was freshly divorced and I was kind of exhausted, and it was really a crazy time being alone without my children for so long. And I was used to spend a lot of time with my children, and then being thrown to the weekend daddy thing, that was not nice, and I have to got used to it. And so this was the point where the whole story was 2 years old or something. So I was mentally a little bit exhausted.
This was a lovely project for you then to pour your energies into. Now, how did you interact with those eggs while they were in the incubator?
I didn't knew, but I thought perhaps they can hear me in the egg, because at the end of the whole breeding process, you can hear them beeping out of the egg. So I thought perhaps they can hear me inside. And then I took a book and I chose Niels Holgersson. It's a Swedish tale from a little boy who's riding on the back of a goose. And so I read Niels Holgersson for them for several hours a day. And I recorded the noise of the propeller of the microlight aircraft and the noise of my little silver horn. I had a little silver horn with a black rubber bulb at the end, which the kids use for the bikes. And this noise sounds like the honk of a goose, of a mother goose. So I played these noises for them from an MP3 player inside the incubator to get them used to it.
And so when they're finally hatched, tell me what happened then.
On one morning, I got a call from our animal caretaker at 5 a.m. And she said, "Hey, Micha, one eye is cracked and you have to come. And then I jumped into my clothes and rushed to the institute. And there was the one egg, and the crack was at that point already a little hole. And you can see the little beak and the little goosling inside. And he or she, I didn't knew at the time, was working on getting outside of the egg. And so you always have the feeling you have to help her, because it's really easy for you as an adult man to crack up the shelf and get her outside, but you aren't allowed to do it. I left the room for the next 6 or 7 hours, and then I came back, and then she was sitting there inside the incubator, this little golden yellow fluffy ball. And she was beeping at me. So I opened the incubator and put her under my shirt so that she had the smell and the warmth of the body. And so I was goose dead from that point on.
And then, of course, she was joined by her brothers and sisters.
Yes, at the next day, because they coordinate hatching. They come one by one.
How soon did it become apparent to you that all of these little goslings had different characters and personalities?
That was quite fast. I think after 2 or 3 days, you could see that there are some goslings which are more bond to me than others. And we had Paula, for instance. She was very lovely and very caretaking and always looked for me and always wanted to come close. And the opposite was Freddy, who was kind of revolution guy or rebel. And he didn't want to come close. So he came when he was really young, but I think only because the others did it.
And so, then you had Nemo with his weight problems.
Yes, later on. He simply ate too much and got too heavy and couldn't fly as fast as the others could because he had too much body weight.
So here they are. You've got 7 little goslings, little golden balls of fluff, and they're basically kind of living on you. They're inside your shirt. They're inside your bed. Are you sleeping with them?
Yes. In the beginning, when I was had the first night with Gloria, then I had to sleep with her in the bed, because my plan was to put her in a laundry basket right beside the bed so that she can sleep right next to me. But that didn't work. I switched out the light and she starts crying and wanted to come close. So I decided to put a towel beside my head so she could sleep on the towel. And I did that. I set her on the towel and switched off the light again. And then it took 20 seconds and she came crawling under the duvet and slept there near to my chest. So I got stuck in this position all the night because I was really afraid of squeezing her or smashing her.
It's just like a baby. It's like having a human
Yes.
baby.
Yes, it's like having a human baby, and it feels quite similar. That was really astonishing to me.
And then, of course, she joined by her siblings as they began to hatch. Must have been quite messy.
Yes, because they poop a lot. A goose is pooping their own body weight a day.
Wow.
When you have Nemo, he has 5 kilos. let's say a goose has 3.5 or 4 kilos, and you have 7 of them, then you have a lot of goose poop around.
But how do you deal with that?
I cleaned it all the day, and I cleaned myself all the day, and later on I didn't take care of having goose shit everywhere. So, and it's not so ugly, because it's the geese only eat grass. So if you would do that with cats or something, that would be really, really ugly.
So let's not forget that, of course, at the root of this is a scientific experiment.
Yes.
So you have these little goslings and you're bringing them up, and at the moment they're sleeping with you, you're imprinting madly with them. But of course, their purpose is for science.
Yes, the purpose is for science. The purpose is to gain data. We did it because we wanted to know whether we could estimate wind speed and wind direction out of the data while a bird fly. So we plan to provide these data for meteorological stations or for, let's say, a sailor who is on the Atlantic Ocean and faces a storm. And then he could look at the data of a frigate bird, which is 300 or 400 kilometers ahead of him. And then he could perhaps change course or something.
Why was it important then to have geese that you could control, so to speak? Could you not just strap measuring instruments onto any bird that you hadn't invested all this time into?
You could catch storks or something, put the loggers on the storks. But the problem is to catch them again and get down the loggers, because the loggers produce such big amounts of data that you can't send them over the mobile cell phone net, what we usually do. So we have to put down the loggers from their bags and do a data readout on the computer. Mm-hmm. So we had to have some animals which stay in my place or at my place.
So tell me about the process of bringing them up, of them learning to waddle along behind you, to swim and, of course, to fly.
For me, it was really exciting because I didn't knew anything about it. You can't read a book where it's the manual for imprinting geese or the manual for learning them to fly. You don't have to learn them to fly. They can fly themselves, but you have to learn them to follow you and stay close to you in the air and stay close to you in the lake. But later on, it turned out that this was really no problem. When the imprinting is done, they stay on your side because that's their genetic program, I think.
So what impact must that have had on your life if everywhere you went, you were followed by a flock of geese?
There were exhausting moments. There were funny moments because for me, it was really, really funny at the beginning that I even can't go to the toilet in the morning without the little gooselings. In the first morning, all of the 7 gooselings, I wanted to go to the toilet. And we walked all together to the toilet and I let them outside of the door, closed the door, and then they start crying. So I opened the door and then they came in. In a march, they came in and then they sat under my trouser and fell asleep. And so you have the program inside your head from your human kids that if a newborn kid falls asleep, you let it sleep for as long as it wakes up. I sat there for 30 or 40 minutes on the toilet, and after 20 minutes I can't feel my legs, and so it was quite funny.
What about teaching them to swim?
That was a little problem in the beginning, because normally geese have a special type of gland at the back where they can get some oily secretion where they oil in their feathers. So, and this gland doesn't work for the first 2 weeks. So normally they oil their feathers when they crawl under the mother's bottom in the nest or when you sit somewhere. And I don't have feathers, so this was a little problem. So I tried to compensate it with an old lamb wool pullover, but that didn't work. So I had to look that they don't stay too long in the water, because the feathers got sucked up with water and then they got cold. So after 10 minutes, we had to go out of the water again. But swimming is no problem. They love water. They're water birds.
Yeah.
So everywhere they see water, they dive and play and play torpedo. And
of course, then we come to probably the real reason you were chosen for this experiment, which is the fact that you are a pilot.
Yeah.
And so you could physically fly with these birds. How did you teach them to follow a plane?
Yeah, we had our daily training routine. We had a little runway prepared in front of the institute on a big green grass field. And we had a barn where the microlight was inside. And so we went out every day, pulled out the microlight onto the runway, and then you start rolling really slow with the microlight and honking the horn all the time, and then they come and follow you And I was always afraid of the propeller, that they come into the propeller or come too close to the wheels or something like that. But that wasn't the problem, really.
But there were some tragedies.
Yes, there were some tragedies. Nemo died at the end of the experiment because he was the leader of the whole group. I think there might have been a fox in the night and he tried to protect the others and got stuck with the feet inside the net and fell down and broke his neck. So that was really sad.
Mm. And there must have been some quite challenging moments too. What was the most difficult thing, do you think?
The most difficult thing for me was when they stopped flying. We had a problem after a while that they realized that it doesn't make sense to fly with Papa Goose only just in circles around the airfield. Normally, the geese fly in the morning from the lake to a cornfield and eat some for eating. And when they are ready, then they fly back to the lake. But normally they don't waste energy on flying. Flying is a really energy-consuming process. So they started with me. And before leaving the area of the airfield, they turned left to the aviary and landed and have some food. So Freddy taught them to do this.
This is the rebel
yes,
goose.
Yes, yes. So I was really down at that moment because I had the feeling I did all these efforts and in the end I couldn't gain some data or the whole experiment was on the edge.
But in the end, scientifically speaking, it was worth it?
Yes, totally. Because then there was the one day I took Paula on my lap. Because I wanted to transport her to the starting point on the runway. And I realized on my lap whilst I was sitting in the microlight, I realized that she was sitting there really calm and really relaxed. So I decided spontaneously to start. And then I started with Paula on my lap. And we gained 1,500 meters. And she was sitting there really free, looking down and... When we were 1,500 meters above ground, I took her and threw her outside of the microlight. And so we had the first time we were really high and we had really lots of time. And we flew together for 1 hour and it was really crazy. So that was a turning point because from now on, we were able to measure the atmosphere in different heights. So that was really cool.
Yeah. And now you talk about it being a successful scientific experiment. I wonder how it was affecting you personally and emotionally.
For me, it was like closing a circle or something. That was, for me, it was a process of coming back to nature, coming back from a virtual reality of staring into your smartphone and looking into Facebook all the time and communicate via WhatsApp with others instead of talking to them. I sat there in the morning with 0 degrees or lying there and the little goslings were under my shirt and it was cold and then you see the sun coming up and you feel the warmth of the sun and you see how everything comes to life and that every organism around you wants to live. You see the insects and you feel as an integrated part of nature. That was very healing for me.
And what about your relationship with your own children? How did that evolve when you had all these other responsibilities?
For me, it was wonderful because they come to visit me every second weekend and every Wednesday on Thursdays. And they spent the time with me in the trailer. And after 4 weeks where I was really alone all the time without any other humans, because I don't want other humans to be around us, because I want to have the bond of the geese and myself to be as strong as possible. But after the first time of 4 weeks, my children visited me.
Do you think there's a danger that we anthropomorphize animals, that we give them human character or believe that we see human characteristics in them, which are not really there?
For me, I always try to look at animals as what they are. And I try not to give them too much human abilities or human characteristics. For the book, I did that because that was, I found it really funny. And that was what I felt in that moment. I really felt that characteristics. I think it's human that you do that. It's human that you, if you're part of a family, and I felt like a part of a goose family, then you don't know whether you are a goose and or the goslings are humans, or and the goslings don't know whether they are geese or humans. So it's mixed up a little bit.
Can you eat meat?
No poultry.
As a direct result of this?
Yes.
Where are the geese now?
Two of them are in a wildlife park. At the end of the experiment, I brought them there because the Niels and Calimero didn't want to fly away as the others did. The others I lost whilst flying, one by one. I brought them to a wildlife park and they are still there. Sometimes they away for 2 weeks, but then they come back because they got really nice food there for no effort.
And you didn't want to keep them with you?
No, I don't. I want them to live free, have their own families and fly around. I go and visit them.
And do you think this is an experiment that you'll repeat, possibly with a different kind of bird or indeed animal?
I would repeat it, but I think it wouldn't be the same because my personal situation was special at that moment. And what was really exciting was that I didn't knew anything about the whole process. I didn't knew how things will go. And so this was very exciting. That was an experiment. Yeah. And if I would do it again, I would know so many things. And I think I wouldn't do it alone again. So I would try to share it with another person. Because today, for me, it would be really complicated to be 3 months in the forest, doing nothing else than taking care of geese or other animals.
What do you think you've learnt from this project, apart from obviously look up from your smartphone?
I learned that if you have a dream or if you have a goal, then don't think so much over it. Just start. You only have to start and just do it and react on the problems you will have. That's how I live my life. And be open to changes. And then a lot of good things come up to you.
It's an utterly charming book. It's also, I should say, got photographs in it.
Yeah.
Really sweet and some absolutely stunning photographs of you flying with these geese, as well as you swimming with them, sleeping with them, doing the whole lot. Just in terms of a literary project, you'd not written a book like this before. Was that difficult?
No, it wasn't difficult because I simply wrote down what I experienced at that time. I would have problems if I would have to create some stories about things or about, I don't know.
Yeah.
But this, it comes straight from the heart.
And will you write more, do you think?
Yes. I'm just writing another book at the moment.
About?
Yeah, about animals again and the relationship from humans to animals.
And are you still in your lab job at the Institute?
I don't work a lot in the lab anymore. At the moment, I developed a new handy app, which is called Animal Tracker. You can download it. And with that Animal Tracker app, you can track our animals around the globe. That was my job for the last 15 months.
Now, if you had to describe yourself, would you say you're a scientist or would you say you're a writer?
I'm a scientist. Not a writer.
Well, I beg to differ. I think anybody who sees this beautiful book would definitely say that you're a writer. Michael Cutting has written Papa Goose, 1 Year, 7 Goslings and The Flight of My Life. It's published by Greystone and it's out now. Michael, thank you so much for coming on to talk to me.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Meet the Writers, thanks to the production team of George McDonough, Christy Evans and Martha Libri. You can download this show and previous episodes from our website or app, from SoundCloud, Mixcloud or iTunes. I'm Georgina Godwin. Thank you for listening.